Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
I'm Leo in London.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. We want people to know that autistic therapists exist and to broaden the conversation about neurodiversity. You're so welcome to join us. Whoever you are and wherever in the world you are, we hope you'll find something of interest and connection here. Do you know what you wanted to talk about was travel
and yes, that's right.
Sensory stuff?
Yes.
Around all of that.
Yes.
Because you told me how it was for you, and then we had talked about it before. We've never done a podcast on it, of what it's like to travel.
Mm-hmm. And that's right.
All of that, the stuff that came out of that. And that,
So although Shauna, hello, I have a visitor in Dusk, which I'm very privileged to experience. She's a picky cat, apparently.
She is a picky cat, but I think she likes autistic people. She likes you. Okay, we can say she likes you. That's okay.
So, yes, Shauna said in the opening words of this episode that we're in Carrick, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything to some people. Mm-hmm. Carrick is short for Carrickfergus. It's a town just north of Belfast in Northern Ireland in the United Kingdom. And I live and I'm from London in England. So I've had to get here. I had to get here the other day and I flew because that was the most efficient and unfortunately the cheapest way to get here. Mm-hmm. And that involves going through airports. A lot of autistic people find that an exceptionally stressful environment because not only do you have all kinds of time stresses. You have a flight to catch. If you miss it, that could be disastrous. Mm-hmm. These places are very often very crowded. That's not great. They're very, very big spaces with lots of noise, mm-hmm. huge amounts of visual stimulation. Mm-hmm. In fact, all the senses are attacked if you're sensitive in any of those ways. I'm generally okay. I'm not, well, okay, I'm reframing as I speak because this is the old, oh, no, I'm fine bit. There are ways in which people with, and so I'm going to use the disability paradigm here, which is not comfortable for all people, not necessarily for me sometimes, but hidden disabilities, invisible disabilities, and neurodivergence comes under that heading in that paradigm.
It's very noisy.
It's noisy.
We can talk about that and what that's been like as well.
Yeah.
Actually, afterwards, because it does help to have someone here to share the fact that all the noises go on. And I talked before about the work in the house and the impact.
Yes, that's absolutely
of that.
True. So actually, you saying this now is totally broadcastable because it's in the context of this moment
and
when I'm trying
autistic,
to talk about something that is to
dealing
do
with unpredictable noise.
Yes, and which is partly what I'm talking about.
But
so I became aware through you and also through some of the people I work with of the sunflower lanyard. So this is a lanyard, you know, a thing you wear around your neck, decorated with sunflowers, and you can have a card attached to that, like an ID card, and it will talk about, give some basic information about your, in this case, your neurodivergence and what you might require.
Mm-hmm.
When I found out about these, I went to look at their website. I'm sure we'll put a link in the again in the show notes, and got myself a sunflower hidden disabilities lanyard as an autistic person. And I have travelled about a little bit since I've had it, and I haven't worn it partly because I haven't felt the need, although that's changed now that I have used it, and also because it's conspicuous. And there's another big explosion of something I thought was over by now, which is imposter syndrome around my neurotype. Not that I
think I'm not autistic. I'm well over that. But the idea of marking myself out as needing some special attention or consideration felt too much. And also just made me, in my mind, because I hadn't done it in fantasy, made me feel very conspicuous and self-conscious. And because I work with people who have experienced this, I was very encouraged to try it out this time, particularly as I was flying out of Heathrow first thing in the morning, which is, I believe, the world's busiest airport, certainly one of them. And so I went the full autistic. I had noise-cancelling headphones on. I wore my sunflower lanyard, and it was absolutely amazing that I enjoyed the protection from sound that the headphones gave me, and how incredibly well trained the people in airports, and I know it's particularly airport staff who have the best training, I believe, in spotting people like me wearing this. So there were three incidents really where it did something that was very noticeable. One was, as soon as I joined the enormous queue of hundreds of people to go through security, somebody pointed out a different queue. Now, often in some airports, there's a separate queue, which is a fast-track queue, so you don't get stuck in a crowd. But at Terminal 5 at Heathrow, there's actually a completely different security area staffed by lovely people. Who assisted me from a little bit of a distance, said encouraging things. And in fact, I was told off at one point because I took a photograph because I wanted to show, I wanted to show people what a lovely area this was. And it was so empty. And immediately I had my phone out. And obviously somebody spotted, they said, "What were you doing with your phone?" And because I'm honest, I said I was taking a photograph to show how empty it is. And he said, "No, you can't take a photograph in this area. It's actually against the law." And he needed me to delete it. But he was so delightful about it and calm and compassionate and stood over me in a very non-threatening, non-intrusive way to show me, in fact, where this photograph might not only be in the bin, but the bin needed to be emptied too. And was just, you know, there was
And
no,
he didn't shame you.
That's it. I was going to say he wasn't aggressive with it, but why would he be aggressive? But yeah, there was no. So that was incident number one, and that was really lovely. And again, that my imposter syndrome was still there, saying you don't deserve this very special treatment. Why are you so different from everybody else who's queuing, etc. But I stayed calm in a way that, and again, it's like. It's like being in this autistic space and discover with you, I mean, in your house and discovering that there's this authentic me that I didn't know about before by having that particular pressure relieved from me for the first time. I realized how disturbing it actually is, how much energy I spend staying calm, actually, in those crowds, all the huge amounts of distractions I have to keep me okay. Incident number one. I'll be quick with the other ones.
No, I don't think you need to. I think there's so much in that, and realizing that you benefit, like they're well trained, and therefore you benefit from it, and you appreciate it. That, you know, like you felt that, you felt the calming of it, you felt the care of it.
Yes, you that's exactly what it was.
And it's okay to be cared for as an individual. These people are actually paid and trained to care for us as individuals. And we're one of the generations who has obviously gone through school and life without accommodations. And without anyone giving us any special treatment. You know, so in some ways we do deserve it now because we've never had it before.
That's a nice point.
But, you know, we're just not used to it at all that people would be employed to actually help make life not so utterly overwhelming for us.
And these are, you know, civil servants. These are employed. Well, actually, no, they won't be. They'll be employed by the air. Anyway, doesn't matter. These are kind of officials. But my next experience was commercial, which was once I was through airside of the airport. I went and got some coffee and some breakfast from Pret a Manger. And
link in the show notes.
Well, we're not I kind of think no, but at least this particular Terminal 5 branch deserves some props. I did, you know, there was not much of a queue to be served, but then you everybody who's ordered a hot drink goes off to the corner to queue to pick up their coffee or tea or whatever when it's ready. And I was okay with that, and I had my headphones on, queuing for the coffee. But after a few seconds, another member of staff came away from the counter to the back of the queue where I was, bringing me my coffee, which they'd made ahead of everyone else's so that I didn't have to stand in the queue. And didn't, you know, it was just, and seemed genuinely delighted to do it. Yes. And this is something that you pointed out when I told you this story.
What did I say?
You said that it must be love, and I would, if it were the other way around, this would be me. It must be actually lovely to have that training that's for the good of somebody. Oh, it's to relieve suffering or distress and to put that into practice when you get the opportunity.
Yeah.
Rather, compared to a first-class passenger in a first-class lounge who's paid thousands of pounds in order to have privileges.
Yes.
It's probably, or it would be for me, a very different experience to give that service to someone who you know is going to genuinely feel so lovely.
Yeah, and be really appreciative.
And be so appreciative.
And it's going to help their life.
So that really helped me, because I think you said that to me when I was wobbling about imposter syndrome and not deserving the treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was relief in that. And then finally, when I went down to the actual gate to get on the plane, they call you up in groups from 1 to 9, and I looked at my boarding pass. I was in group 9, so I would have been the last on the plane. Somebody, however, one of the crew spotted my lanyard, beckoned me forward, and I was first. What they did for me, which was so valuable, is they kept me away from crowds.
Yes.
And that's what I, that's one of the adjustments that I
that you realize
need.
That you need.
And although I can cope and probably visibly cope, although I can't prove that, if I am in a queue, if I am in a crowd, it is... Yes. Way more uncomfortable than I've ever given it credit for as an adult. I know this was a huge problem when I was a child. But having been relieved of it, you realise what the weight was.
I know.
I mean, weight as in heavy.
I know, I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Rather than this.
Wait for the queue or wait for the crowd to disperse. Okay, wait and wait. We love words.
And so... That is that. In any travel situation, I will be wearing my lanyard and observing what the differences are with no sense of entitlement. That's really important. And maybe that's also that difference between me and the first class passenger who's paid lots of money, is that comes with entitlement. I'm just so grateful.
Yeah.
That the accommodations are starting to be made.
Yeah.
And even, you know, I've noticed now on disabled toilets at airports, there's usually a sign that says not all disabilities are visible.
Wonderful.
You know, so that people don't tut at you if you go in there not in a wheelchair or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. My daughter and I always wear the lanyards in airports because I guess I really stress. In airports, I always did really stress in airports. Airports and hospitals, I am visibly autistic, with or without a lanyard.
Is it okay? I mean, if you want to, can you describe how you're visibly autistic in those situations?
Like, I look anxious. Anybody would be able to see on my face. Like, it wouldn't be able to be hidden. I won't be able to find where I'm going to. Like, someone will need to tell me and look at signs or where I'm meant to look to. Like, I would always look, or I would I would be checking things and asking for reassurance. Like, if I was putting something on the security, I would be going, am I allowed to do this? Do I need to take my shoes off? Do I need to, I would be listening to what they were saying and it wouldn't be clear enough. So then I would be asking for, but what about this? What about this? What about this? Do my EpiPens go through there? Do you want them separately? And constantly checking and just maybe being you know, and just like dropping things and
looking a bit panicked.
Looking panicked.
Is that what you're describing?
Looking panicked, yeah. And looking, yeah, overwhelmed, and like looking around me and, you know, just looking scared, I think. Looking scared. And you know, like constantly checking if I know maybe other people do that, but like much more than normal, like checking where is my stuff and what do I need. Like, you know, whenever you go and you have things and they hand you back, maybe your boarding pass and like the little sticky thing, like kind of, well, where do I need this? When do I show that? When do I show that again? And you know, and like just asking all these clarification-y kind of things. But with the lanyard, people will, and they do talk slow to me.
Yes,
they talk slower to me.
Yes,
and they tell me only the basics. They say, "Are you okay with that?" And they say things like that. And they, and I, in any other context, I would feel like I was being patronized. If
that's
somebody
right.
did that in another, in a
but
context,
you've invited it and you've given permission,
it,
in fact,
given
for that to happen.
Permission for that.
Yes.
And so now it's much more like they're going to see me, they're going to know that I'm going to be anxious, so then I'm actually less anxious. But without all of that, I would think I would be visibly like stressy and highly strung and asking all these questions,
yes,
and going over and over and over things, and like not being able to use the toilet because I would think, right, well, if I go here, I'm not going to be able to orientate myself when I come out of the toilet to know where I need to go next. Because it's all so big and there's too many entrances off different places.
Yes.
So
yeah.
If I said, where do I go next? And they say, you go to departures. And then I make it to departures and I make it to this thing where they say, what gate are you going to be at? And then I wouldn't even check in with my body, but just say I did and I needed the toilet. Then I would worry that I would then find a toilet and never be able to find my way back to that place, you know? So then I won't even check in. And then I could end up on a plane and be like, I meant to get a drink, but I didn't get a drink. Should have gone to the toilet. And then you're uncomfortable the whole time because you haven't dealt with your body. So I couldn't deal with any of those kind
That's
of things.
Exactly.
Whereas with the lanyard, people look after you. So you're seen as someone who's going to need, and people come up to you. I find people come up to me and say, are you okay? Do you know where you're going? So even if I'm like, you know, reading this thing and you've got to go to gate such and such, and I'm on the right track to go to that place, someone could come up and say, do you know where you're going? Okay. And then they look at what you're looking at and say, yes, you're right. You keep on going. And they give the reassurance without like you
That's
having
it.
To ask.
It's, yes. The giving the reassurance is nice. So two things occurred to me there. So one, your experience also in feeling, in being as you, exactly as you described, visibly autistic.
Visibly anxious, I guess, but
yes, but that's what I'm thinking though. It's visibly, these are the visibilities of your autism.
In that context.
But to some untrained people or whatever, you also have a gender aspect.
Uh-huh.
I think if a man is walking around looking especially anxious and flappy and confused, probably, this is just me, I'm making this up, it's full of assumptions. I imagine a lot of people go, oh, what's up with him?
Yeah.
If you're doing it and you're a woman doing that, it could be there's an anxious woman, there's a neurotic, you know, there's all kinds of horrible stereotypes that can overlay and get in the way of that you might need some help and compassion or whatever.
Especially if I'm on my own. If I'm with a child who's also dysregulated, then
that
is also part of it, because they would also say, well, she's worried because she's got an anxious child as well. She's got her hands full, you know. So
there's
much
lots
more
of
compassion
ways,
that comes in.
That's true.
And two of us together, both autistic, both overwhelmed, we're going to invite compassion. Especially if we're wearing a lanyard, because they think, oh, that's the single parent also looking after a young person. I mean, she's not a child, but a young person, and both of us are wandering around, you know, not
in
looking
fact,
for signs. So that's quite a, you know, that's going to engender some compassion, even without the lanyard, but with it, it's kind of like, well, that's good that they're traveling, even though.
I had a kind of, actually, it's just, you've just reminded me, I've said in the narrative, you know, that I had that whole check-in area to myself. I didn't. There was one other, well, there were two other people that were together. There was a mother mm-hmm. and her son, who was, I'm assuming mother and son, but let's, for the sake of argument. And he would have probably been some 12, 14, maybe.
Yeah.
Also, I spotted wearing the lanyard mm-hmm. and was autistic, but, you know, very physically demonstrating his autism. He was leaning from foot to foot very excitedly. He had flappy hands and there was the occasional shout. And my initial reaction was to that. I was like, oh, God, that's not me. I shouldn't be here.
Oh, yeah.
But that was really brief, because whenever I do encounter people like that in the world or on telly, or I've always related to them all my life before diagnosis. So immediately that was kind of another part of me came forward and said, no, look, this is where you should be. He's like you. He's just very, very different.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was really lovely. And the other thing, to at least draw to an end what I wanted to say about the lanyard and the travel experience, which is going back to the beginning and why I was absolutely the final straw that said I'm wearing it this time, was one of my client sessions with people I work with somebody who had recently done a journey and has experience of the lanyard. And the one thing I think I asked them, I can't remember, but, you know, does it make my, I was talking about my own concerns, actually.
Yeah.
I feel, oh, my God, one of the cats on the top of one of the dolls' houses. You've seen pictures of the cats and the doll houses, so you can put them together in your head. Is that I said, well, my concern about it when I thought about using it previously is it's going to make me look very conspicuous and draw attention in a way that most, I'm guessing, autistic people
don't
find very uncomfortable.
Attention. Yeah.
And what they said, which I thought was so, so helpful, they said, well, yes, it did make me more conspicuous, but it also gave me permission to be autistic and not to hold myself together.
Yeah.
Because they would see that and go, okay, there's some context.
Mm-hmm.
And that, although I don't think in those situations I am particularly visibly handling the world differently to neurotypical people around me, it did give me permission to look puzzled, to wander about a little bit more, to lose my way and visibly correct it, rather than, you know, the stereotype of when you realize you're going the wrong way, you suddenly look at your watch and scratch your head and turn and go, because otherwise you look stupid. I just didn't feel the need to do any of those things while I was in that environment. And it was lovely. And I think the air crew on the plane gave me a little bit of a nicer smile. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But what it does highlight, and we talk about this, you know, privately a lot, is that although all those accommodations by definition cannot be made for everybody, because otherwise airports would be 10 times the size and they wouldn't be financially viable. I get the capitalist reasons why this doesn't happen. It doesn't mean I agree. But the things about the training and how to speak to me, if everyone was spoken to the way I was spoken to, it wouldn't cost more and everyone would benefit. Most of the accommodations that we need, if applied to everybody, would hurt nobody and benefit everybody. They're not all viable. I understand the situation that, you know, the economics of this and why that doesn't happen. But some of that stuff, which was just about personality, it was just about consideration and compassion. Why can't that be universal?
But I'm thinking about the example where, and this must have happened recently, it must have maybe been in the summer, when I was already on track to the right gate and somebody came and asked me, was I okay? And I see you, I'm twisting this wire.
I'm wondering if it's interfering with this. I hope it's not interfering with the sound.
I can see what you were doing. And it was either that it's interfering with the sound or it's going to wreck the wire.
Oh, I don't care about that. That's replaceable.
I was already on track And this person said, was I okay? And obviously that must have been because I was wearing a lanyard, because you wouldn't ask everyone that was on track if they were okay.
Yeah.
But she didn't know if I was on track, you know, obviously. True, maybe there was still a puzzled look on my face, even though that I was. But if you were that, like, say you were that tuned in and you did notice somebody that might not be okay, you take a risk if you ask them if they're okay, that that person is going to tell you to clear off. Like, what do you not... you know, be offended. Yeah. Be like, what do you have to fool you? Of course I'm okay.
Yes.
Like, people like to be independent and they like to...
Yeah.
So it's actually almost like giving permission.
Could be shaming to...
It's like giving people permission to be kind to us. The lanyard does do that. You know, even like really kind-hearted staff might wonder if someone's okay, but not approach them because they... That might be seen as patronising.
It could cause offence. It could cause harm, ultimately.
Or be patronising. Or just get told, back off. Why are you talking to me? Because people can be so rude. It's like even whenever you're out and about and you might want to, like, you might notice that somebody might not be okay and you have to think, you know, what can I do? And then you might just smile when you would want to actually say something, but you don't. Or sometimes you do. And, you know, and how many people are held back by etiquette and that we don't really do that. And maybe the lanyard actually invites people to be their compassionate selves, that they have to switch off and tone down because of so-called professionalism.
Yes, yes.
Which is sad.
Yeah. Yes, it's sad.
Did we want to talk about anything else?
Yes, but I can't remember the specifics. So there was something about sensitivities that I think came out of the travel thing that you said, and I don't know specifically what that was.
Did you say, was it about, we were talking about certain smells and there's like a smell in my house that reminds you of things.
And Ricky's
house as well. So, whenever I picked you up on that day, we had to do several things because my daughter had an orthodontist appointment and there was some things to do. One of the things we had to do was stop at my daughter's dad's house because he was looking after the cat overnight because of work that was being done here. So the fireplace was being filled up and because the cats couldn't be running around because I was out of the house and the workmen had to come in and do that. So I had to leave them a key. They had to come in and do that work while I was going to get you from the airport. And I couldn't have the cats running around because of the fireplace being open and workmen and around. So Ricky took the cats the night before to his house and we were stopping to get the cats on the way back here. And there was a smell in his house that evoked something for you. And then you said that there was the same smell in this house.
Actually, it's something different, but there was something similar. But can you remember what sense I made of it? Because I can't.
Well,
now.
You said, was it that it was similar to the smell of someone that you used to know or like their parents' house?
God, I can't remember. I know that at Ricky's there was something about a very, very early memory of a holiday in France.
Oh, I forgot about this. That's what it was. It wasn't the person's parents' house.
And where did that happen? Was that here?
That is actually to do with my shampoo. That's a different thing. Okay, but that is another thing that happened. But the thing with Ricky's, you're right, it felt like somewhere that you were in the path, but then you also noticed that it was the same here, and we were trying to make sense of that, how it would be the same, and also associating because Ricky and I are still married, but we live separately. And I guess we said we were going to do some kind of a podcast at some stage on relationship styles. And so I guess that's relevant in the sense that Ricky and I have a very kind of interdependent relationship. And I said to you, well, I wonder if it's just because, you know, he took furniture that was previously in this house. Like there's a sofa.
Oh, I see.
Been,
so there would have been a...
There's a sofa that used to live in this house that now lives in his house, you know. He doesn't have a washing machine and tumble dryer, so it's down here. It's the same washing liquid, you know.
Yeah, there will, like, yes, of course, there will be that kind
all
of...
All his stuff will smell, like the cutlery, the... It's all the same stuff as was here. Of course, he's got new stuff. But, you know, there will be a similar smell in his environment than there will be here because of how we live.
So that led to a conversation then about, I mean, there's accepted wisdom, and I haven't looked this up, actually. I've just always known it to be a fact, but that smell is the sense that's the most hardwired to memory.
This is right,
I thought you might know a little bit more than me about that, whether that's actually a thing. But it's definitely true anyway, I mean, just in my own experience. And I was, that's the next point I was coming to. Is that dialed up for us?
I think so.
Because there is so much, you know, I now can tell you actually very specifically because what that smell, not what it was, but the time that it took me back to. And if I think about it, it's crazy because I would have been barely 2 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It would have been the apartments where my aunt and uncle lived in Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
And that we visited them there when I was two. Because the other times that I've had childhood holidays to France, it just doesn't apply.
Yes.
And I can really make that connection with that smell, a smell I wasn't aware that I even had in my memory. If somebody had said to me a week ago, do you remember that smell in the apartment block in Monte Carlo? I've gone, well, no, there wasn't one and I wouldn't have remembered it. And I was two.
Yeah.
That definitely was what that took me back to. Also, because I think there's something about, because Ricky, I know you've said house, but it's an apartment block, it's a block of flats.
Yes, yes.
And that, so is the radically different, because it's in this, you know, Monte Carlo, that also an apartment block with a common stairwell or whatever. Uh-huh. And it's just, that took me back there. But it was so, and it was pleasant. This was not an unpleasant.
But there's two things there. So you're actually talking about, and you're right, you did comment in the stairwell on the way up to his apartment, but then you also commented that the smell that was in his apartment is similar to what's in this house. So that's two
But I hadn't been
smells.
Here at that point.
No, but then when you did come here.
Yes, then I could say it was the same,
You said, was it, like, because you actually said, was it, is it like the, is it scented litter, you know, for the cats?
That's right, because those were, that was a common thing that had been in two places.
But it's not that, because it's not scented. So yes, that was the secondary thing.
Yeah.
There was the smell in the, so the smell in the stairwell was the France thing.
Definitely.
But then there was another association of the two homes.
Yes.
That you said those two homes smelled
the same. Yes, they are linked again.
Yes.
And is that, so this is sensory sensitivity, that's a, that's a double positive or something, isn't it? I don't know. Seems superfluous to say sensitive and then sensitivity. Sensory.
That's two different
I'm tying
words.
Myself up in knots.
Yeah,
I'm sensitive to my senses. Well, of course I am, that's what sensitive means. Edit that out, please.
It's not, because I think it does.
But that did lead to this conversation that we had, and that's what I'm trying to kind of get a grasp on.
Okay.
Of, we know that neurodivergent people of various flavours have dialed up sensitivities in various ways, especially autistic people. But in this case, it was also linked to that very fine-tuned pattern seeking.
Yes, it was that.
Wasn't
it?
That I was able to make that link, even though it's taken me until this conversation now to actually be specifically clear of where it was. But I knew this was about me being in France when I was very young.
Yes.
Maybe, why don't we have a season of autistic licensing the senses and do them, an episode on each one?
Okay,
listeners, we've just made a... Let me finish my biscuit.
No, because let's not promise. You know my demand avoidance will come.
We intend to. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, okay. At some point.
So, listeners, we are thinking about the idea of one day considering the possibility of maybe making a series of these podcasts, a series of five, or unless we want to start thinking about the more obscure senses, on each of the senses. And how we experience them, because we know we experience them very differently.
Yeah.
And also differently from each other too. So it would be really great if you want to pop along to our Facebook page or just search for Autistic License on Facebook, or, and the links are in the show notes, or email us at autisticlicense@gmail.com. If you've got anything to say at all, or any examples of how you experience it, your senses, and we can bring each of them into the relevant episode.
Wonderful.
If we do it, do not hold us to this or anything.
Because we always have autistic license to do as we please.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you think we're done?
I think that's loads, and that was lovely. I don't think there's very much there at all that needs to go.
As long as that noise doesn't.
As long as the noise doesn't, and we'll see what my usual filters are. But we've explained it. It doesn't matter if they hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
It really doesn't. Just, it won't be intrusive.
On people,
it might, and we maybe need to put a warning out about that. There is background noise and it sounds like this.
Yeah. We could.
And if you can't stand that in the background, we've done our best to suppress it, but maybe skip this episode.
Yeah, cool. Wonderful.
Thank you, Anne Stott.
Thank you. See you next time.
Oh, we didn't say goodbye. Yes, that's a good point. So I'm just going to stick that in. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com, or by email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. And we spell license the British way, L-I-C-E-N-C-E. We also have a thriving Facebook community. Search for Autistic License Shauna and Leo, or click on the link in the show notes.